From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. It's Politics Day, and with midterm elections less than 3 weeks away, today we focus on the Iowa gubernatorial race. Later in the program, a conversation I had yesterday with first-term incumbent Democrat Chet Culver. First, though, his Republican challenger. Former Governor Terry Branstad will be in our studio live for the first half hour. A new poll paid for by the Culver campaign shows the first-term Democrat has gained ground against Branstad and is now within 8 points. We'll ask Terry Branstad about the new poll numbers and, of course, the top issues in the campaign right after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and it's Politics Day here on this Wednesday. And with midterm elections less than 3 weeks away, today we focus on the Iowa gubernatorial race. Later in the program, a conversation I had yesterday with first-term incumbent Democrat Chet Culver. First, though, in our first half hour, we welcome to our studios in Des Moines his Republican challenger, former Governor Terry Branstad. Governor Branstad, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben. I'm glad to be on.
We want to reach out to our listeners in this half hour. If you have a question for Terry Branstad, please join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Let's dive into some of the issues we've been hearing about during this campaign. Some of the latest news on the latest revenue estimates, Governor, from Iowa's Revenue Estimating Conference, increased by nearly $300 million for the current budget year. In an interview with Governor Culver that our listeners will hear in the second half hour of this program, your opponent says this is a sign that Iowa has weathered the economic storm. With these figures, these latest figures, do you see also that the worst of this recession is behind us?
Well, I think that's wishful thinking. Unfortunately, the state of Iowa had a projected $1 billion shortfall, and so now it's only $700 million. That's still a huge problem because, unfortunately, last year, Governor Culver and the Democratic legislature passed the biggest budget in Iowa history at a time the nation was in recession. And then, just about a year ago, Governor Culver, after disregarding the warnings from Republican legislators and passing the biggest budget in history, then did this massive 10% across-the-board cut, which led to layoffs and furloughs. And of course, local schools were shorted their state aid and had to use their cash reserve. And now we've had a huge property tax increase that people have just paid at the end of September. So we need to get back to stability and predictability in budgeting. I want to put together a five-year strategic budget plan for the state, insist that the legislature pass a biennial budget, not an annual budget, and enforce the 99% spending limits because during Governor Culver's 4 years, he and the legislature have consistently violated the 99% spending limit and spent more than the state was taking in. That's why we have this big shortfall. And even though revenues are modestly better, remember, you're comparing this against last year when revenues were down dramatically. So if you look at it, and even against 2 or 3 years ago, it's still not a very good situation. The bright spot in the Iowa economy is agriculture, and right now we have high commodity prices, and that's great for agriculture, but we need more jobs in Iowa. 114,000 people out of work. The unemployment has increased by 50,000 since Culver became governor. I want to put the focus back on jobs in the private sector, reducing the tax and regulatory burden, and being hands-on involved in attracting more business and jobs and helping entrepreneurs and small business to grow and start their businesses here in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to jobs in Iowa, also agriculture, a little bit later. But to go back to our first venture here in this conversation, the budget and these newest numbers, also a recent study published by 24/7 Wall Street, that's an online business news and information service, ranked Iowa as the third best-run state. And it had data it showed to back it up. Iowa's debt per capita, sixth in the nation. The nation's eighth lowest unemployment rate, 6.8%. Iowa's education rating, seventh best in the nation, nearly 91% of 25-year-olds having finished high school or its equivalent. Doesn't this, Governor Branstad, fly in the face of your very dim portrayal of the way Iowa has been run under Governor Culver?
Well, I think you need to do is compare the results when I was governor plus and then look at under Culver. When I left office, we had a record number of people employed, and we also had a $900 million surplus. Under Governor Culver, the unemployment rate's gone from 3.7 to 6.8. We've had one scandal after another. Just yesterday, you had the indictment of four people that contributed money to the Culver campaign in the gambling industry. At the same time, Governor Culver was soliciting the Racing and Gaming Commission to grant a license to Peninsula Gaming, the people who were involved in this. And we've never, in recent time, we've never had that kind of a campaign scandal involving soliciting contributions while at the same time deciding, the Racing and Gaming Commission deciding on licenses. We also had the scandal involving the film office, and five people have either been fired or left, and Department of Economic Development really has been decimated. I want to revitalize it and put together a public-private partnership that will be effective to, again, track business and jobs to the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it, I think most Iowans feel the state's going in the wrong direction. We're losing jobs. And, in fact, we've used one-time money, all kinds of one-time money like the federal stimulus money, leaky underground storage tank money, money from the Senior Living Trust Fund for ongoing expenses. So the shortfall in next year's budget is still $700 million, $600 million in Medicaid alone. That's a big challenge that we're going to have to correct. And I have the experience and the background to do it. When I was governor before, I corrected the budget problems we had, and we put the budget on generally accepted accounting principles. We put in place a 99% spending limit, and we enforced it. In the last 4 years, Governor Culver and the Democratic legislature have violated the spending limits by just putting appropriation language that says, notwithstanding the law, we're going to spend more than that, and that's the reason why we're in the financial trouble we are. I want to correct that, and I think I have the experience and the leadership ability to do it. I also know you don't do it by yourself. You got to surround yourself with a talented, capable group of leaders, and we don't need the revolving door we've seen in the governor's office and in the department heads and all the mismanagement and scandals we've had. We need stable, reliable, predictable leadership, and I intend to put together a strong team that will get Iowa back on the right track.
If you'd like to pose a question to former Governor Branstad challenging Governor Culver, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Don't we have to mention there as a footnote that the Culver campaign was, in regards to the film tax credit and so forth, was cleared of any wrongdoing in that case?
Wait a minute. They were not charged, but doesn't say they were cleared. It just says they weren't, criminal charges weren't filed against them. I understand they're going to be called as witnesses, but they were soliciting money from the people that violated the law, basically laundering money to give to the Culver campaign for governor. That I don't think it passes the
cleared
smell
in, cleared test. In the campaign contributions question.
Well, they weren't indicted. That's the only thing. They weren't indicted. But the fact is, the contributions were made that were illegal, and four people have been indicted. The campaign hasn't been indicted, but they were the recipient of that money.
Let's talk about jobs, which you mentioned as well, before we get to our callers. A number of people want to talk to you as well. Governor Culver says his iJobs program has created 7,000 jobs. Your campaign promises to create 200,000 jobs, I believe. How will you do that?
Well, first of all, let's take his claim that he's created 7,000 jobs. When the legislature passed that in 2009, he promised 30,000 jobs. The unemployment rate at that time was 5.3%. It's now up to 6.8%, and there's been really no showing of permanent jobs. And then plus by the fact that he signed this project labor agreement, he basically locked out the Iowa non-union contractors from bidding on this, and the big projects at the University of Iowa and at the Fort Madison Prison have gone to out-of-state companies. So iJobs stands for Illinois Jobs. We have Illinois unions that are getting these jobs paid for by the Iowa taxpayers, and it's being done with borrowed money. Mm-hmm. He's done this by borrowing over $800 million. It's got to be paid back with interest over the next 23 years. It's money that would have gone to the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund over the next 23 years, $55 million a year is going to have to go to pay back these bonds. It was a bad idea, and the jobs aren't going to Iowans. In fact, the unemployment rate has gone up. Contrast that with my approach. My approach is to reduce the tax and regulatory burden and to provide incentives for entrepreneurs and businesses to start up their businesses in Iowa and create jobs. And I've set an ambitious goal, 200,000 new jobs over the next 5 years. And I have a track record of having achieved ambitious goals because, remember, when I became governor before, the unemployment rate in Iowa was 8.5%. And I was hands-on involved in recruiting business and jobs and reducing the tax burden. And the result, when I left office, the unemployment rate was down to 2.5%, and we had a record number of people employed. So I think I have a proven record of getting things accomplished, and his approach has actually not resulted in permanent jobs, and even the contracts have gone to out-of-state companies instead of to Iowans. I think it's terrible.
Okay, well, I want to ask you with this, iJobs focuses on infrastructure projects, flood recovery. We know that Iowa has those needs. How do you address the infrastructure?
Well, you need to do it on a pay-as-you-go basis. We established, when I was governor, using the tax money from the gambling facilities, a Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund. And he is now, unfortunately, taking $55 million a year out of that fund to pay back these bonds. I think it should be done on a pay-as-you-go basis. I was governor during the flood of 93, and we did everything we could to expedite getting help to the flood victims from the federal FEMA and also from the state, and we even received private donations, and we had a very well-coordinated flood recovery coordination, and that money was distributed, and we had an after-action report completed in May of 1994, less than a year afterwards. Now we're over 2 years since the flood in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids, and only 34% of the money has actually gotten to the businesses and the residents and the people that have suffered damage from it. And as part of it is because there's no one person in charge of seeing that the decisions get made timely. And you've had this big turnover in the Department of Economic Development. They've had a runaround from HUD. And as a result, there's a lot of frustrated people that are wondering why they haven't received the money they were promised.
Governor Branstad, if we could move on in the interest of time, we're running out of time. In 1995, let's move to this issue, local control. You signed a bill into law that stripped all local authority from regulating factory farms.
Not true. I signed a law that for the first time put together uniform state. There were no regulations before that. We put together uniform statewide regulations on livestock confinement and gave the authority to the Department of Natural Resources to regulate that. We required that farmers that are involved in livestock also have to have a manure management plan, and that has been administered by the Department of Natural Resources since that time. And I think that law has worked pretty effectively. We've had a few habitual violators like Mr. DeCoster, mm-hmm. who should have been put out of business, but that's another story.
Isn't it true since the signing of that bill, since 1994, a year before that bill was signed, the number of hog farmers in Iowa has dropped from 29,000 to 8,300 as this industry continues to consolidate? Now, what do you say to the hog farmers who lost their livelihoods due to this consolidation?
Well, first of all, I think you need to know we've seen a revitalization of agriculture in Iowa. We are the leading pork-producing state. We are the leading egg-producing state. We're even seeing our cattle numbers come back. And I signed a law also that established a renewable fuel standard, and we are now leading in ethanol, biodiesel, and wind energy. We're second only to Texas in wind energy. So agriculture is now a successful and profitable business. And the last thing we want to do is to damage the one part of the economy that's the strongest right now. I grew up on a farm. I understand agriculture. I'm a strong advocate for value-added agriculture. I want to see we have fair, uniform, consistent regulations to protect mm-hmm. the environment, but I also don't want to prevent farmers from doing what they do well, and that is produce the food and fiber and the energy we need for our country and for the world.
Why, then, are you against giving local governments control over the siting of these hog farms?
Well, because, incidentally, the Democrats have controlled the legislature and the governorship for the last 4 years. They've not done that either because they realize that a uniform, consistent set of regulations makes more sense. And that's been the law since the 1990s. It's worked effectively. I think it needs to continue. We need to have local input, but the decision should be based on science and not on emotion, and they should be based on what is in the best interest of not only the environment in Iowa, but also economic growth and opportunity in our state. And we've seen a revitalization of agriculture, and I'm proud of it. I want to do all I can to help Iowa grow and prosper and create more jobs in our state.
The state workforce, Governor Branstad, is smaller than it has been in years, but you say you want to cut the cost of state government by an additional 15% if elected. Where do you plan to cut?
Well, first of all, I think you need to know what happened is last year the legislature gave state employees an opportunity to receive a $25,000 bonus if they'd work for the state for 25 years, plus pay their health care for the next 5 years. So we're going to have to pay that over the next 5 years. But now Governor Culver wants to go back and hire 1,100 people back. That'll take away the savings. We're already paying their health benefits on the ones that retired, and now we hire 1,100 back. That doesn't make any sense. I think instead we need to look at ways that we can reduce the size and cost of government. When I was governor before, I got the state out of the retail liquor business, and we sold the state aircraft fleet. Now I want to sell the state motor vehicle fleet. That can save us $34 million. I want to combine 11 systems for email into one and save another $25 million and not fill these vacant positions that are funded, and that can save another $25 million. I also want to use lean, a concept that's been worked effectively in manufacturing. When Vilsack was governor, he started to use that in state government, and unfortunately, Governor Culver discontinued that. I want to get us back into lean. That's a way we can squeeze the waste out of the processes of delivering services to the people of Iowa and make it more efficient and accountable. And one of the reasons why I chose Kim Reynolds to be lieutenant governor is she'd done this at the local level as a leader of the County Treasurers Association in Clark County and as a state senator. And we want to work with local governments to find the best and most efficient way to deliver services. One way we did it that she came up with years ago was driver's license issued at the county treasurer's level instead of the DOT commission going members going around to the state to deliver that. Instead of offering it a half a day a week in rural counties, people can now get their driver's license issued or renewed 5 days a week during regular working hours. We're doing it with existing staff in these rural counties. It's more efficient, and the constituents really appreciate it. Another thing we did is make it possible that people pay their property taxes and their vehicle registration online. We need to look at more efficiencies like that so we can make government more efficient at less cost to the citizens.
About 5 minutes left in our conversation with former Governor Branstad running against current Governor Culver. Let's go to Tom in Iowa City. Tom, good afternoon. Your question.
Yeah, hi. I got a comment and a question. My comment is that I really wish that politicians across the board, and this goes for Branstad and everybody, would stop saying things like, I think all Iowans or most Iowans agree with me. If you don't have any stats to back that up, all it's doing is sort of mass appeal to sort of blind numbers.
Our time is running out. Your question, please, Tom.
My question is this. Do you believe that civil rights, such as same-sex marriage, should be decided by popular vote? And if so, do you think that interracial marriage should have been decided by popular vote, and that in theory anybody's marriage should be legalized or illegalized by popular vote?
Okay, this is going to the retention of justice issues, which is on the ballot this midterm election. Governor Branstad, where do you stand on the retention of these justices?
Well, first of all, that really wasn't his question. His question was on same-sex marriage.
It hinges on that because the campaign against these justices.
It's related, and it's a different issue, however, because changing the justices doesn't change the decision. I signed the one man, one woman marriage law. It has been the law in Iowa, and I think the court was wrong to overturn it. I believe the people of Iowa should have the opportunity to vote on restoring one man, one woman marriage, as they have in 31 other states, and every state where the people have had a chance to vote on it, from Maine to California, it's passed. I think Iowans deserve that same kind of opportunity. Mm-hmm. On the issue of whether the justices should be retained or not, that's on the ballot, I think individual citizens should decide in their own conscience whether they believe the justices deserve to be retained or whether they should be replaced. And I have not taken a public position on that.
Why not? Why not?
It's a valid issue.
Why shouldn't you?
First of all, I'm running for governor, and I'm focusing on jobs and it's a big job of being governor, and this is a ballot issue, and I think the people of Iowa should make that decision for themselves.
What about Tom's point that, let's say the 1960s, that we had taken a national poll, most people would have been against having interracial marriage. Now, a Supreme Court ruling in 1967 outlawed the banning of interracial marriage.
That was never the case in Iowa.
We're talking about Iowa. In many states in the United States. But
I know,
the
I'm
idea
not
is putting.
I'm running for governor of another state. I'm running for
but
governor
the question
of
I think Tom had was basic civil rights being put to a vote. He has a problem with that.
Well, it depends upon what you consider. It's never been a basic civil right to have same-sex marriage. It's never been that way before. And the court has made that decision. I think the decision was wrong. And I think the court was inappropriately, they should have used judicial discretion and not got into an area that this was a law passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, and has been the history of our state, and I think it should be maintained, and I think the people should have a right to vote on that, and people will have an opportunity to vote on that if
the
legislative leaders give the people a chance to vote on. What is really unfortunate is the majority leader in the Senate and the Speaker of the House have denied the people the right to vote on it. So people are going after the justices when really what they should be doing is going after the legislative leaders and changing those leaders, getting people that are more responsive and not controlled by outside interests that will give the people of Iowa an opportunity to vote on an issue that they care deeply about.
Okay, Tom, I know you wanted to continue that conversation. We want to get in another caller, though. Herbie is in Des Moines before our few precious minutes end with Governor Branstad. Herbie, please make it quick, please.
Yeah, Governor, I mean, you said you'd cut funding for preschool education. You know, I'm solidly in the middle class, but I can barely afford preschool for my two children. Tell me exactly what income level will qualify for state assistance. $20,000, $30,000? I want an exact number.
Well, we haven't worked out the exact number, but I will tell you this.
Let me tell you the
system that's been used to provide help to students that go to our private colleges. We have an Iowa tuition grant program that provides financial aid, and the family income can be pretty considerable. I guess what I'm saying is the wealthy should pay their own tuition. I paid tuition for my kids to go to preschool. I think that the wealthy can afford to pay it.
What about those in the middle?
Let me finish answering the question. The low income get Head Start, and I believe we should provide financial need on a need basis. The more need, the larger the scholarship. That way we can afford it. But to start a new entitlement program, provide preschool for millionaires, and then cut teachers and raise property taxes is wrong. We need to have a sustainable system. I want to put together a sustainable system that gives all four-year-olds the opportunity for preschool, but families will contribute tuition that can afford it, and those that can't, we will provide on a sliding scale based on income scholarships to assist them.
Governor Branstad, we've run out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming to our studio in Des Moines. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Coming up in our next half hour of The Exchange, a conversation I had yesterday with first-term incumbent Democrat Chet Colver. You'll hear his take on many of the same issues you heard addressed by Governor Branstad. That's when we return. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Now we hear from incumbent Democratic Governor Chet Colver, who is seeking his second term in office. Before being elected Iowa's Secretary of State in 1998, Colver taught government and history at Roosevelt and Hoover High Schools in Des Moines. I spoke with Governor Colver yesterday and began by asking him about the latest revenue projections. Governor, the latest revenue estimates from Iowa's Revenue Estimating Conference increased by nearly $300 million the current budget year, which ends June 30th. With this good news, where do we stand for the next fiscal year in terms of balancing the budget?
Well, I think we're as well positioned as any state in the country. We have a $700 million surplus when you include our reserve accounts and our ending balance. I think we've weathered the economic storm and we're coming back with a vengeance. Iowa's economy is outpacing most states in the country. And I think it was very good news just about a week ago. Iowa was recognized as the third best-run state in America. So we have a balanced budget, a AAA bond rating, and a surplus, and most states can't say that. In fact, 28 states have deficits in their current fiscal year. Iowa's not one of them. So I'm very optimistic. It's still going to be very tough, obviously, to address the needs, especially in terms of education. But I'm committed to putting together another balanced budget that really reflects our values in terms of health care and education and renewable energy.
That increase by nearly $300 million doesn't cover the entire budget. So how do you plan to cover the remaining gap?
If you take the surplus, if you add the revenues that are coming in addition ahead of higher than projections, and you factor in our reorganization plan for fiscal year 11, we're going to save $250 million by making government more efficient, streamlining information technology services and email systems and the vehicle fleet we're starting to consolidate. So you put all that together, and that's well over $1 billion that we start ahead. And then finally, we've taken a big step in terms of collecting unpaid fines and fees. There's more than $500 million out there across the state in terms of those unpaid fines. And we hope to bring in the door more than $1 million in fiscal year 11. So, again, we're starting on solid ground. But the best news is our economy is growing again. We have had 11 straight months of economic growth. And we have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation. And we're going to create more jobs and have more economic prosperity in this state over the next 12 to 24 months than any state in the country. And that's going to help us put our budget together.
Your opponent has criticized you for taking the approach of cutting the state budget by 10% across the board instead of setting priorities and using more targeted approach to cutting the budget. Governor, why didn't you pick winners and losers in the state budget instead of having this 10% across-the-board cut?
Well, first of all, you know, Terry Branstad can't have it both ways. When he was governor, he had three separate across-the-board cuts. So he was for across-the-board cuts before he suddenly is against them. We stood up and made the tough decision last fall. The idea of getting consensus from 150 legislators and all the special interest groups up at the Capitol, it would have been unlikely, if not impossible, to try to agree on how you cut the budget $600 million. We were hit with this economic tsunami that was caused by corrupt practices on Wall Street and failed economic policies under the Bush administration for 8 years. And I had to stand up and make that tough decision. But we're coming back. We've restored, for example, 8% of the 10% cut to our K-12 schools. And I've proposed an additional 4% for K-12 next session, which would actually not only make us whole in terms of our education commitment for K-12, but add additional resources to those school districts that need it.
Going back to your comment about your challenger, Terry Branstad's proposal to cut the cost of state government by 15% if he were to be elected, he said one place the state can save some dollars is salary and health benefits for public workers. He also said public employees should contribute to their health insurance premiums. This is something you would rule out?
Absolutely. We're already contributing. I have a family plan. I have two children, my wife, and we pay for a share of our health care plan. Out of pocket, we have deductibles. So why Terry Branstad wants to try to, you know, cut the budget on the backs of public employees is beyond me. In fact, I think it really shows that he's not ever been supportive of public employees. In fact, he refused to give public employees a raise back in 1991 after they bargained in good faith to get the raise. He lost a Supreme Court decision that forced him to pay our state employees the salary and benefits that they bargained for and they earned. And the worst part is when he was governor, he took 8 separate pay raises himself. And that's one reason we're going to win this race, is that, you know, while Terry Branstad wants to pull down and take benefits and salary from our public employees who keep our communities safe, who help us deliver essential services, he's proposing an out-of-state corporate income tax to out-of-state corporations to the tune of $90 million. That's what his proposal to cut the corporate income tax would cost the taxpayers of Iowa. So he's not only wrong in terms of that policy decision to go after state employees' pensions and benefits and salary, but his values in putting corporations in front of hardworking men and women in Iowa is certainly out of step with the majority of Iowans.
Do you agree with Terry Branstad, though, that the size of state government should be reduced?
No, we've just reduced the size of state government to a point where it's smaller than it was when I started the job. The state budget today, the general fund appropriation, is $100 million less than it was when I became governor in 2007. And for Terry Branstad to now suggest that we're going to cut even deeper, an additional $800 million cut, is not rational. It's not possible without massive layoffs, thousands of public employees, firefighters, police officers, school teachers, or an $800 million property tax increase at the local level, or Terry Branstad will just do what he's done before and raise your taxes. He raised taxes 60 different times when he was governor. After pledging as a candidate in 1982 to not raise taxes, the first bill he signed was a sales tax increase.
This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. If you've just joined us, we're talking with incumbent Democratic Governor Chet Culver, part of our series of conversations with candidates in the run-up to the November 2nd elections. Governor Culver, you established universal preschool, going back to your earlier mentions of education as one of your top priorities. Universal preschool, one of your top priorities as governor. That was before this economic recession, the last time you ran for office. Admittedly, we have some better numbers coming out of the revenue estimating conference. Can we still afford this priority of universal preschool instead of, as your opponent has argued, making preschool needs-based and providing access to parents who can't afford to send their children to preschool? What's wrong with that approach?
We cannot afford not to invest in our children. I was at a preschool this morning in Des Moines. The fact is, under Terry Branstad's proposal, 22,000 four-year-olds would not be able to go to preschool because he has proposed taking $90 million out of the state budget that allows us today to provide preschool to 22,000 kids in 325 school districts. What Terry Branstad doesn't understand is that needs-based preschool is exactly why we've expanded this program across the state. Parents need to help. They need additional support and resources to allow them to send their child to preschool. So the parents have to pay something now. The problem is, before this statewide initiative, tens of thousands of parents couldn't afford to send their child to preschool, so they just didn't go. The average cost is more than $500 a month per child. So the state has stepped in. They've made preschool more affordable. There are 10 hours of free preschool, but most of these programs have 20, 30, or 40 hours a week, and the parents pay a fair amount to make sure their child gets an early start in terms of education. So what we were doing before was we were denying access, and as a result, very few four-year-olds were going to preschool. Now we've completely reversed that problem, and we're providing more preschool opportunities to more kids in Iowa, and I will expand that to every district in the state in my second term.
Now, with this as a continued priority, who will be sacrificing in order to continue paying for universal preschool for four-year-olds? We understand, of course, we have limited means, and of course the budget will continue to be tight, even though you say we're out of the worst of it. Who will have to sacrifice?
It's all about priorities. People have already made sacrifices. Our state employees have already taken pay cuts. 20,000 people in the executive branch last year took a pay cut. The key is what are our values? That's really the question. And even though the budget today is smaller than it was when I started, we've still managed to spend more than $400 million more on K-12 education than we did before I was governor. So it's a matter of really setting those priorities, and that's exactly what we've done. We've expanded health care to 58,000 kids because we value the importance of health care for all of our children. Yes, that costs money, but we can't afford not to make sure our kids are healthy. So it's not necessarily winners and losers. It's a matter of efficiently using the resources that we have to invest in our children and to invest in our future. For every $1 we spend for preschool, for example, the return on that investment comes back, you know, $8, $9, $10 for every $1 we spend today. We save $8 or $10, you know, tomorrow.
Looking further down the road, the long-term plans to keep Iowa spending within its means, since we won't have stimulus infusion, federal dollars, how will you address the structural deficit in your second term, should you be elected, created by programs such as Medicaid?
The same way we've attacked the budgeting process in the past. I have put together four balanced budgets in a row. The budget has been balanced every single day that I've been governor, and we now have a surplus. The other thing that we've done on my watch is we've earned a AAA bond rating for the first time in recent history. When Terry Branstad was governor, we barely had a single A bond rating. Bond rating agencies give those AAA awards to only states that have sound GAAP accounting principles that don't try to hide certain funds. Our process is transparent, it is sound, and it's allowed us to balance the budget and use taxpayer money efficiently. There's always a projected gap years out because there's some uncertainty in terms of what the federal government may or may not do. That's been the case in Iowa since 1846 when we became a state. And the key is what does the budget look like today, not what is the projection going to be in 2020. It's a matter of balancing the budget right now and keeping it in balance. And we've done that, plus we have a $700 million surplus.
Governor Culver, you advocated for local control of siting of livestock confinements when you were running for governor 4 years ago, but little has been done to make this a reality. Do you still support local control?
Absolutely. And the problem's gotten worse. It's not gotten better. I think it's unfair that local folks, especially in rural communities, don't have a fair say in terms of the siting.
So why was nothing done if it was a priority of yours when you campaigned 4 years ago?
You know, sometimes you get hung up in the process. I've urged people to continue to speak out. I've heard from more and more constituents about their concern related to this issue as the problem gets worse, and I expect we will have a long overdue debate on that issue next session.
What do we do about the habitual offenders such as Jack DeCoster, who put Iowa egg producers in such a bad light nationally?
Well, again, this is a real issue in this race. Terry Branstad has proposed that we deregulate corporate agriculture. He is actually running for governor in 2010, believe it or not, on that platform. And after everything we've learned with this salmonella scare, all that we should have learned with the Wall Street collapse and offshore drilling, Terry Branstad's got to be one of the only candidates in America actually calling for deregulation. I mean, it's unconscionable to think that that's really the direction that Terry Branstad wants to take us. We need to have appropriate levels of oversight. We need coordination between the federal entities like the Department of Agriculture and our state Department of Agriculture. And I've called for a complete and thorough review of all state and federal laws and rules that apply to food safety. And I expect that next session there will be some changes made to tighten up the oversight.
In 2009, Governor, you requested the legislature create an Iowa Jobs State Investment Program. We know it as iJobs through the issuance of bonds rather than raising taxes. And during 2009 and 2010, in the sessions, the legislature created an $875 million iJobs program. How many jobs have been created with that program?
We've had more than 7,000 Iowans working on iJobs projects this summer alone. This is a three-year initiative, 2,200 projects over the next 3 years. So tens of thousands of jobs will be created. Our most recent number suggests more than 20,000 over the next 2 years. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce said that one reason why Iowa has the eighth fastest growing economy in America is because of our investments in infrastructure. So, the iJobs initiative is working. It's short-term putting people to work. It's helping us recover from the worst disaster in our state's history. Nearly half of the money is going into flood recovery projects. For example, in Linn County, we have 63 separate Iowa jobs and infrastructure projects, all related to flood recovery, a new Paramount Theater, a new fire station, a new library, a new Czech museum. And then at the University of Iowa, we've put $100 million into the Iowa Jobs and Infrastructure Initiative so that campus and our third largest employer, the University of Iowa, can come back and rebuild Hancher and more than 10 other buildings that were destroyed in the flood.
iJobs, your big program for economic development and job creation, you say it's doing working well, and the economy is the big issue this election. So why then aren't you doing better in the polls if this is the main thing people are worried about this election cycle, and your main program for doing this is working so well? Why aren't you doing better in the polls?
Well, it wouldn't be an official show if I didn't have some news. And so I want your listeners to know that we've cut the lead in half. Our polling suggests that it's now an 8-point race for governor. 2.5 weeks ago, it was 19 points. So we're going to win this race because Terry Branstad has broken his promises. He won't be honest with the voters about his proposals, including how he's going to cut state government 15%, and we've gotten the job done, and people are starting to see that there's a clear choice, and that choice is moving Iowa forward with the Culver Judge ticket or going backwards all the way to the 80s with Terry Branstad. And at the end of the day, elections need to be about the future, not about the past. I want to keep moving Iowa forward on embryonic stem cell research. I want preschool for every four-year-old. I want health care for every child. I want to stand up and fight for women's rights and civil rights. Research related to renewable energy is critically important, and Terry Branstad wants to take away. He wants us to go backwards.
One of the
on women's rights and on workers' rights and on civil rights. And that's why we're going to win this race, because the overwhelming majority of Iowans are starting to see very clearly that we've gotten the job done and we have a vision that fits with our exciting future. We were just recognized as the third best run state in America. Why do you want to fire the coach when you've got the third best rated state in the United States of America? Most coaches would get an extension, a bonus. I just want a second term, and that's why I hope your listeners vote for me on November 2nd.
Governor Chet Culver, thank you for this conversation.
I really enjoyed it, and thank you so much, and I look forward to visiting with you again soon.
That was Iowa's incumbent Democratic Governor Chet Culver. I spoke with him yesterday by telephone. He and Lieutenant Governor Patty Judge are seeking a second term in office. And that's all for today. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Technical support from Dennis Reese. We also had help from Rick Fredrickson in Des Moines. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio available at iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. You can contact us anytime. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. is our email. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.